Tuesday, November 6, 2018. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City. We are right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every weekday. We talk sports with a dose of common sense. Might just mix in some sarcasm here or there just to kind of keep you on your toes, but we are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Tuesday to you. Did you know that today, November 6th, is actually a very important day in sports history? Because back on November 6th, 1869, we saw, I didn't see, but somebody saw, the very first college football game ever. It was played between New Jersey and Rutgers College. Yeah, I mean, who knew that? Rutgers, by the way, won the game 6-4. No idea how that was scored. Not sure really what the scoring system was at that time. I don't know how you came up with six, and then I don't know how you came up with four. But I'm assuming maybe they had some rugby scoring or soccer scoring or something. I don't know what it was. Still, when you think back to that score of 6-4, really there were still more points being scored in that game, clear back in like the Civil War era, than my beloved Denver Broncos can score in this era. Hey, if you'd like to contact us, let us know the first game that you ever remember watching. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or feel free to go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at @DailyDosports. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you have a suggestion. Maybe you wish the Denver Broncos would fire Vance Joseph. Whatever it might be, bring it. We would love to hear from you. Today on the show, you know, Mondays are always a bit rushed. Like, we're trying to cover so many things that happened over the weekend. So on Tuesdays, we like to catch up with the football weekend by recapping the biggest winners and losers from the week in both college football and in the NFL. So we will be doing that today. Plus, we do have a few sports news stories to touch on. So we've got a lot to get to today on the Dose. We had better jump in. Starting off in the NBA, Magic Johnson says head coach Luke Walton is going to remain the Los Angeles Lakers head coach, barring something drastic happening this season. Yeah, we're not going to fire him, Johnson said. After the Lakers fell behind 41-10 in the first quarter on Sunday night before eventually losing to the Toronto Raptors 121-107 at home. Johnson continued, the meeting last week with Luke Walton wasn't even a meeting about that. We just have to be better, and that was it. Now, Johnson first told the Los Angeles Times earlier on Sunday that he was planning on keeping Walton as head coach, barring, like he said, some drastic circumstance taking place this season. Then he was asked after the Toronto game what drastic could be defined as. Like, hey, do you think getting down 41-10 would be drastic? Johnson politely declined to go into detail. So now he says that the meeting that he had recently with Luke Walton had nothing to do with his job security, had nothing to do with his job at all. It was just a meeting. Wasn't anything to do with that. You know, when I'm hearing this, and then I hear him say, yeah, we're not going to fire him. First, he says, we had a meeting. Then he says, well, it wasn't a meeting about his performance. Then he says, oh, no, we're not going to fire him. What's the line from Hamlet? The lady doth protest too much. Magic, when you keep saying it, I stop believing it. We know LeBron James has not played well with coaches for the most part of his career. We also know that as much as Magic and LeBron are preaching patience, hey, just be patient. This isn't the team we're going to be. We've all got to be patient. There is no patience when it comes to the Los Angeles Lakers. Magic can keep saying how he won't fire him all he wants. All it's convincing me of is that you're totally going to fire him. Like, hey, we're not going to fire him. You know what that means? Yeah, I'm going to fire him. First chance I get. Oh, and Tyronn Lue, keep your phone handy because you seem to be the only guy that LeBron really liked, primarily because when you were the head coach, actually he was the head coach. Don't be surprised to see that happen this year. I won't be surprised by it at all. And you know, speaking of that, we always say that it's just so early in the NBA season to get too excited about anything going on over there. The season is just so long. Let's just be patient right now in the NBA. Let's just kind of let things unfold. Let's see how things go. Well, when are NBA teams going to start listening to the Daily Dose? Because the Houston Rockets are already starting to hit the panic button after they have started off as slow as they have. Their defense has been awful. So the Rockets have gone out and they say lured former defensive coaching specialist Jeff Budzelic out of retirement. Budzelic is now 65, and he has now signed a deal to work as the Rockets defensive coordinator for the rest of the season. Now, he said he had some family issues that he had to attend to, but that he could join up with the Rockets after Thanksgiving, once his commitments are completed. But can you imagine Coach Budzelic showing up after Thanksgiving, had the nice meal, hung out with the family, all full of turkey, had some pumpkin pie. Hey, fellas, all right, let's get going here. Let's see. You know what? We've got to get this defense back to form. CP3, hey, good to see you. Glad to be back here to coach you. Always like working with you. James Harden, you ready to roll? You looking good? Seems like you got your offense on track. Gonna get you on track defensively. Clint Capella, hey, that sure is a cool first name you've got there, dude. Hey, wait a second. Where's Trevor Ariza? I don't see him. What do you mean he's gone? Well, who'd we get? Carmelo Anthony, what are you doing here? Oh my God. Did I seriously agree to do this? Hey, good luck, Coach Budzelic. You're gonna need it. Finally, you know how they say there's no such thing as a coincidence in life? You know, all things kind of happen for a reason. Let's just kind of keep that in mind with this next news story, because just 1 week after we heard that Las Vegas took in the most money on sports betting ever, this next story came out. Nevada industry sources are estimating the state's sportsbooks lost in the range of $7 million to $10 million overall during the NFL games on Sunday.
What?
Uh-oh, Vegas is losing money. In the early games, the books found themselves holding lopsided betting action on the Minnesota Vikings and the Pittsburgh Steelers, two popular picks that easily covered their spreads. But their fate was sealed by the Kansas City Chiefs, the most heavily bet favorite on the board Sunday. Kansas City closed as an 8-point favorite over the Cleveland Browns, and of course we know they won easily, beating the Browns by 16 points. 88% of the money wagered on the point spread at William Hill Sportsbooks in Nevada and New Jersey was all on Kansas City. MGM Vice President of Race and Sports, Jay Rude, said this, "We were pretty much done at that point. Disaster." Now, it was the third straight subpar weekend for the sportsbooks, but Sunday was in a class by itself. And another sportsbook manager at Caesar's Palace said it was one of the worst Sundays he could remember. Bad. Really bad. "We won one key decision today." Oh my goodness. Do you guys hear that? Las Vegas. Are they going to close their sportsbooks? Are they going to survive? They lost their shirts on Sunday. Oh, this is bad. They could be in some trouble. Get out of here with this nonsense. Las Vegas says they lost between $7 to $10 million. Yeah, except I'll bet you took in $60 to $70 million. Do you see the problem there? And now this story comes out and more saps are running to Las Vegas. Hey, Vegas is in the business of giving away money. I'm gonna hit it big. No, you're not. Don't believe the hype.
Don't believe the hype.
Man, Vegas never loses. It is not a coincidence that 1 week after the story broke that Vegas made more money than ever, suddenly Vegas is telling us, "No, we didn't. We never win. Look at our empty pockets. We don't have any money at all." I'm not believing that for one single second. Hey, coming back, Mondays, like I said, are always so busy. On Tuesdays, we like to look a little closer at the world of football. When we get back, we will be discussing the biggest winners and the biggest losers from what was a very good weekend in the NFL and in college football. So let's take a look at some of the biggest winners and losers in college football from this past weekend. You know, they talked about it going into the weekend. It was Statement Saturday, and it was. We did see a few statements. I don't know that there was any shocking games. I don't know if there was anything that was a major surprise. But we did see a few statements. Let's take a look at the biggest winners and losers from the college football weekend. And you know, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, they've got to be considered a winner this week. They managed to outlast Northwestern on the road on Saturday. They keep that undefeated record intact. And hey, it wasn't always easy. But they eventually would pull away from the scrappy Wildcats. Quarterback Ian Book threw for nearly 350 yards. He also ran for a 23-yard touchdown late to seal the win. The Irish are now the number 3 team in the country, according to the AP poll, and here is that remaining schedule, which may have looked tough prior to the season, but now looks really manageable. Home versus Florida State, total cakewalk. Their last true test will be home versus number 19 Syracuse, then a very underwhelming Southern Cal on the road. I do still think Notre Dame has some small risk of getting bumped from the playoff because they don't have that conference championship game, but they should be in pretty good shape for a playoff berth if they remain unbeaten. On the other side of that, we have a loser, and that goes to another Big Five conference, because if independent Notre Dame gets in, then yet another team gets left out. It looks like the SEC is going to be in easily. It's either going to be Alabama or Georgia. We know that. It could be Alabama and Georgia again. Oh, that's going to make the rest of the nation really happy. The ACC should get in because Clemson doesn't play anyone for the rest of the year. If Notre Dame gets in, that only leaves one more spot. And the Big 12, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 are all sitting around waiting for the music to stop, hoping they have a chair to sit in. I mean, it looks like right now it would be between the Big 12 and the Big 10, but Washington State is still out there if they ran the table. I don't know if they'll do that. Hey, no one can afford a slip up. And either way, we're going to get some serious screaming if, say, the Big 10 gets left out. For Notre Dame, they are going to be mad. Hey, we had to play a conference championship. They didn't have to. That should carry some merit for us. On the other side, can you imagine if, say, Oklahoma or West Virginia gets in and Notre Dame gets left out after going unbeaten? They will full on lose their minds. Either way, the playoff selection committee once again has their hands very full. It's going to be a really interesting November in college football, I'll tell you that. I'm going to give a winner to West Virginia quarterback Will Grier, because not only did Grier go to Austin, beat Texas, find a way to keep West Virginia in the national playoff picture, just barely, but they're there. He also kept himself in the Heisman race, and he didn't just beat Texas. He had to beat Texas 2 times, trailing Texas 41-34 with less than 20 seconds remaining. Will Grier drops back. He throws a 33-yard pass, and I mean, he drops it into a bucket for wide receiver Gary Jennings Jr. The extra point would tie it, and the game would be heading to overtime. But head coach Dana Holgorsen, yeah, he doesn't want to go to overtime. He wants to go for 2 and the win on the road. So Grier hit the quick slant to wide receiver David Sills, and the Mountaineers took the lead. Hey, they're going to win this thing. Except it didn't count. Texas had called a timeout right as the ball was snapped. Okay, well, you can't go for it again, right? Well, I mean, I guess you can if you're as nuts as Holgorsen is, or if you have Will Grier under center, because he found a way to score the 2-point conversion again. Here is a clip from Fox.
Grier in the gun. Grier, quarterback run. Grier, he got it. Touchdown. 2-point conversion for West Virginia.
Gotta love Gus Johnson on that call right there, too. Will Grier and West Virginia didn't just beat Texas once. They had to beat him a second time, too, and they got it done. Will Grier is definitely a winner this week. I am going to give a loser in that same game to the Big 12 refs. And you know, I really don't like to pick on the officials. I honestly don't. We ask way too much of them. It's a thankless job. I genuinely feel bad for officials. They take so much grief. All they're doing is trying to do their job the best they can. But I'm a little confused about what I saw called in that West Virginia versus Texas game on Saturday. West Virginia was penalized 14 times, 8 times in the first quarter alone. Okay, stop being undisciplined, stop doing dumb things. But none of those calls were bigger than a pair of calls after Sills scored on a 60-yard touchdown pass. He was flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct for flashing a horns down hand sign after the score. Following the game, Big 12 Assistant Commissioner Bob Burda said the penalty for the horns down hand signal is solely at the official's discretion. He's not really aware of whether or not teams have been warned not to do that when they face Texas. Is that a thing? I mean, I've seen teams do a mock gator chomp, a mock Seminole tomahawk chop, a mock Trojan victory salute, a mock Sun Devil pitchfork, a mock U for Miami. I've never seen this called, except on Saturday for Texas. I guess I didn't realize that the Texas Longhorns were so sacred. I had no idea. Hey, I don't care if you call it. That's fine. I just expect you to call it for every other school too, because like I said, I've seen it at other schools. I've seen other teams do that to other schools. You can't just call it for Texas. Just give us some consistency. If you're going to call it that way, perfect. No taunting. You're not going to do any kind of mock celebration. Okay, just call it for every single team. Not just Texas. Not sure what that was about. That was a little bit weird. I am going to give a winner, and I know when I say this, it's going to sound like I've already been drinking on a Tuesday morning, but I swear I haven't. Not that much. I'm going to give a winner to the losers in college football. Over the weekend, the losers were definitely winners. Let me explain a little bit. We entered Saturday with three remaining winless Division I football teams. We ended the day on Saturday with zero. So yes, losers were definitely winners on Saturday. First, we saw VMI snap a 25-game losing streak. Yes, it was against a Division II team, but who cares? They got to win. Later, we saw Tennessee Tech officially become the last FCS team to win a game. They knocked off actually heavily favored Murray State. That is actually a team that had conference title hopes. Somehow, Tennessee Tech gets the win. But the biggest win of the day came in Houston, where the Texas El Paso Miners earned their first victory since November 26th, 2016. Sure, the Miners beat an awful Rice team, but it still snapped a 20-game losing streak. They avoid matching Miami, Ohio for the second longest FBS losing streak of the past decade. Also, just another quick side note, the Illinois Fighting Illini have been 0-15 against Power 5 opponents with a 500 record or better, which is not a good sign. But the Illini also ended that streak on Saturday. They beat 500 Minnesota, who sat at 4-4. Lovie Smith in Illinois, 55, Minnesota, 31. Well done, losers. On Saturday, you were winners. Okay, I'm going to give one final loser, and I have to give this. And if you didn't see it, it truly was magical to watch. Go find it on YouTube or whatever. But on Saturday, Nebraska gave Ohio State all they wanted, finally falling 36-31 in Columbus. And the Cornhuskers are improving. Early on, they led the game 7-0 when head coach Scott Frost, I guess, called for an onside kick, we think. On the surprise kick to maybe gain one extra possession, Nebraska kicker Caleb Lightborn, he tried to just tap the ball for the required 10 yards, but he like mistimed his steps. He missed the ball and he fell down. The ball traveled exactly 1 yard. Nebraska had to just down the ball so Ohio State wouldn't pick it up and take it all the way back. Here is a clip of that horrifying kick from Fox.
7-0, Nebraska with a lead. Lightborn.
Onside.
He missed it. And the ball is going to be picked up by one of the Cornhuskers of their own 35. He swung and missed as though it was a changeup.
Whoa.
A 1 yard kickoff, complete with slapstick fall. You know, the play actually didn't end up costing Nebraska. They held the Buckeyes on 4th and short, and they took the ball back over on downs. But I will bet you money, we will be seeing Lightborn's blooper for years to come. It was just that kind of a kick. Like I said, if you haven't seen it, go find it. It's worth your time. Hey, coming back, we need to switch over to the NFL. We saw a number of winners and losers over there too. And today, we're going to be focusing specifically on the quarterbacks. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping you need to do, and I hate to bring this up, I really do, but Christmas is coming quickly. I know you don't want to think about that, but it is coming quickly. You might want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. November's Loot Crate theme is now out. It is called Laboratory. Some truths can only be found under a microscope. Countless experiments in the Loot Crate Laboratory have yielded a collection of cutting-edge gear that exists beyond mortality. Are you ready for the next step? Hey, November's Loot Crate theme features items from BioShock, Westworld, and Better Call Saul. But if none of those franchises interest you, remember, you can go to Loot Crate. You can choose from a huge selection of crates. You can pick a monthly subscription of crates that you can order or skip every single month if you like what they're offering. Or you can just go over to Loot Crate and pick individual items to order. And trust me, they have just about any franchise you can think of. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just be sure you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order just as a little thank you for tuning into the Daily Dose each and every day. So let's continue with some of the biggest winners and losers that we saw this weekend. We're going to move over to the NFL and we're going to keep it quarterback specific. Playing quarterback in the NFL, it's the toughest job in sports. And I know that they say there are other things that are tougher, but there is nothing like playing quarterback in the NFL where you have so many people trying to take your head off. You're trying to read so many things. You're trying to do so many things at once, like the quarterback position. And sometimes we see it go really, really well. We see players at the top of their game, and other times we see them really, really struggle. Let's look at the biggest winners and losers from this past week in the NFL. I'm going to give a winner, and I'm going to give a winner to San Francisco 49ers quarterback Nick Mullins. I know it took place on Thursday night. But when you look back at week 9, it is hard not to look at San Francisco quarterback Nick Mullins' career debut in the NFL as this huge success. I know. It was against the Oakland Raiders. But Mullins went 16 for 22, 262 yards, and he had 3 touchdowns. And the Niners smashed the Raiders 34-3, a game that a number of people were saying, hey, the Raiders might actually win this one. No, they won't, because everything Nick Mullins did worked. Now, I'll say this. Enjoy it, kid, because it will probably never be that easy again. But for your debut, for your opening night, for the night when you had your parents there and you told everyone to watch and all the people you played with in high school and college, I'm going to be on national TV. It couldn't have gone more perfect than it did for Nick Mullins. You know, if I'm the San Francisco 49ers, I never let Nick Mullins play again. I say he's got some, weird injury, tweaked his hamstring or something. He's not going to play. Sorry, we're going to go with somebody else. He's never going to play again. And then in about, 6 months, I'm going to trade Nick Mullins for like a top 5 draft pick because everyone saw him in that Oakland game and said, oh my goodness, Nick Mullins is really, really good. How'd we miss on him? I don't know if you missed on him or not, but I know for that one night against Oakland, he did everything right. He's definitely a winner this week. I'm going to give a loser, and I'm going to give it to New York Jets rookie quarterback Sam Darnold. You know, Darnold started off so strong in his season opener, and he does still show flashes here and there. But on Sunday, against the Miami Dolphins, Darnold went 21-39, 229 yards, but he threw 4 interceptions. The last few weeks, in fact, have been really, really rough for Sam Darnold. In these past 3 weeks, all losses for the Jets, Darnold is a combined 52 for 110, so right around 50%. He's averaging 196 passing yards per game. He has 2 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Darnold is definitely feeling some growing pains. No, not ready to sit here and say he's a bust at all, but he's definitely going through a rough stretch right now. He is a loser this week. I am going to give a winner to Carolina Panthers quarterback Cam Newton. You know, I'm not quite sure that Cam is quite as good this year as he was back in 2015 when he won the MVP, but we are seeing good Cam Newton as opposed to bad Cam Newton this year for sure. On Sunday, Newton was 19 of 25, 247 yards, 2 touchdowns, and most importantly, 0 interceptions. The Panthers got a divisional win over, yes, the awful Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but it's still a divisional win. They'll take it. But on the season, Cam Newton has 13 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, and the Carolina Panthers are 6-2. They're in good shape for the playoffs. As we get closer to the playoffs, you look at a team like Carolina with a pretty good defense, with Cam Newton, and now we look at what a difference little Christian McCaffrey makes in that offense. He's such a game changer. On any play, handoff, pitch out, reverse, short pass, throw it deep, Christian McCaffrey makes such a difference because you have to account for him on every single play. Hey, Cam Newton is feeling it. He is rolling, and so are the Carolina Panthers. I think they could be a sneaky team in that NFC. Cam Newton, definitely a winner this week, though. I'm going to give a loser, and I've got to give it to Buffalo Bills quarterback Nathan Peterman. I know the Buffalo Bills are not very good this year, despite what a certain caller we get here on the Daily Dose from Washington, D.C. may tell us.
I'm willing to bet my life.
But wow. Bills quarterback Nathan Peterman is beyond awful. The Bills got crushed by the Chicago Bears on Sunday, 41-9, to drop to 2-7 on the year, and Peterman threw another 3 interceptions on the season. Nathan Peterman has thrown the football 81 times. 7 of those passes have gone to the wrong team. So 1 out of every 11 passes that he throws, he fires it to the opposition. Those aren't great odds. Like, that's kind of sketchy. If you're just looking at odds, you'd say, okay, so like every 10th pass, he's going to throw it to the wrong team. Yeah, that's not good. Nathan Peterman might be one of the worst quarterbacks I have seen starting in the NFL in maybe the past 5, 6, 7 years. It's not very good. And you know the bad thing? Buffalo's defense is not that bad, but that offense is atrocious. I am going to give our final winner of the week to Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes yet again. The Kansas City Chiefs get another win on Sunday. They are now 8-1, and Mahomes put up another huge day. He throws for 375 yards. He had another 3 touchdowns. Hey, this Kansas City offense is just a machine right now. They handled the Browns in Cleveland 37-21, racked up almost 500 yards. This year, Patrick Mahomes is completing 67% of his passes. He has a nearly 9 yard per pass average. That's pretty impressive stuff. I still want to see him tested the further we get. I still want to see if defenses can take anything away from him. We've seen spots where he looks like a younger quarterback, but for the most part, Patrick Mahomes is absolutely rolling, and he's got so many weapons around him between his wide receivers, his running backs, his tight ends, his offensive line, and yes, his head coach. It's going to be interesting to see if the Chiefs can keep up this pace the further into the season we get. We know they do most of their winning in September and October. Can they continue to win in November and December? That's going to be huge. I'm going to give our final loser of the week, and like we said, we're keeping this quarterback specific, and I have to give it to Detroit Lions quarterback Matt Stafford. You know, the Detroit Lions, they're struggling lately. We started to see some improvement from them, but lately, as head coach Matt Patricia is telling reporters to watch their posture, he should probably be more focused on his atrocious offensive line that, honestly, at this point, it looks like they are trying to get quarterback Matt Stafford killed. On Sunday, the Lions lost 24-9 to the Minnesota Vikings. And Stafford was sacked, not 2, not 3.
Not 4, not 5, not 6.
No, LeBron. Stafford was sacked 10 times. On the year, Matt Stafford has been sacked 23 times. Hey, Detroit, when yet another player, now Matt Stafford, decides to hang it up at 30 years of age, remember how you tried to break him in half every single game? We've already seen other Lions players do this. Calvin Johnson, Barry Sanders, just say, you know what? I'd rather just take my ball and go home than have to endure one more week of getting killed. And right now, Matt Stafford has to be considering retirement because he is getting killed every single week. Matt Patricia, take the pencil from behind your ear. Start to figure out what to do with that offensive line because it is horrible. Hey, tomorrow on the Daily Dose, we will, of course, be bringing you the latest and greatest in the world of sports news. Plus, I think we may have some Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings for you. You never know what we might have to rank this week. I say thank you all so much for listening to The Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, that text us, that message us, thank you so much. It is all very appreciated. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.